Now the Three Martini Lunch with Greg Corumbus and Jim Garrity.
And welcome, everyone, to the Wednesday edition of the Three Martini Lunch, along with Jim Garrity of National Review. I'm Greg Corumbus of Radio America. Jim, of course, is also the author of The Weed Agency, which is available in bookstores June 3rd. It's available for pre-ordering right now, so make sure you do that. We'll be talking more about that as we get closer to publication date. Jim, I believe we need to add a second good martini today because we had no good ones yesterday. And so we're going to have two today, starting with the Nebraska Republican Senate primary. The National Review cover, non-jinx holds again. I don't know what the opposite of jinx is, but blessing, perhaps. Ben Sasse easily wins the Nebraska Republican primary. He was nearly at 50% in a five-way race. The next closest was around 22%. So as you put in the morning jolt today, this was pretty much the race in Nebraska. It's going to go Republican unless something really bizarre happens between now and November. And in addition to staying in GOP hands, it seems like we've got a very strong conservative headed to Washington.
Very early on, National Review had said that this was a guy that they liked a lot. John J. Miller wrote a really great cover piece. As you mentioned, in the last couple of years, National Review has given the cover to Ben Sasse, Ted Cruz, and Marco Rubio. And so we're three for three. Somebody else reminded us that when Howard Dean was riding high, we said, Democrats, please nominate this man. And he did not win. So you could argue that we're not that successful in endorsing Democrats, but we are successful in endorsing Republicans, and that's a pretty nice place to be. A lot of people are saying this morning this is a Tea Party win over the establishment, and I don't know if that really fits the cookie-cutter definition we're used to for these sorts of races. Sasse is, you know, pretty experienced. There aren't that many Tea Party candidates who can say they went to Harvard, Oxford, or Yale. There aren't that many people in the world who can say they went to Harvard, Oxford, and Yale. He's already worked in Washington, worked on Capitol Hill, worked as assistant secretary at the Department of Health and Human Services in the George W. Bush administration. So it's not like he could say, oh, this is this outsider who's never been involved in politics. No, no. Ben Sasse has spent his career in the world of politics and policy. And that's not necessarily a bad thing. In fact, it can be a very good thing because very early on, the pitch for Sasse was like, look, any Nebraska Republican is going to say they oppose Obamacare. And they should. And that's great. But the question is, so when the voters say, all right, we want to get rid of Obamacare, what do you want to replace it with? Do you want an answer that's like, I'll get back to you on that? Or do you want to have a really detailed answer for this? And Ben Sasse knows healthcare policy backwards and forwards. Now, and our view was clear. I didn't think Shane Osborne, you know, his first kind of major rival necessarily would have been a bad guy. Certainly a distinguished military record. Shane Osborne went negative against Sasse fairly early on, and also like, you know, it's a very just basic campaign message. If you have to go negative on an opponent, use the gravelly voiced narrator. Don't have the candidate himself doing it because then people say, oh, what a jerk. Wow, look at that guy doing that negative. And what happened was Osborne went negative on Sasse. And then, you know, a certain amount of the attention went back to this third candidate who kind of rose towards the end, Sid Dinsdale, a wealthy banker, deep roots in the state a well-liked figure in the state. He was running as a pragmatist who could reach a deal and reach across the aisle. And obviously a conservative is like, whoa, I don't know if, you know, when you reach across the aisle, what are you getting there? Sometimes, you know, a no deal is better than a bad deal. Dinsdale said he himself didn't support Dodd-Frank. There's quite a bit of, you know, evidence piling up that his bank supported Dodd-Frank. And a lot of people kind of said, his denial seemed a little sketchy there, but it's all became very moot. This looked like it was going to be, according to the polls, a very close race, and if not, not that close at all. Sasse is obviously an extremely heavy favorite for the November election, and he should be in that Rubio-Cruz solid conservative mold, but knowing healthcare policy backwards and forwards, and that seems like a good guy to have in the Senate starting in January 2015.
All right, Tropical Chaser now. It was just a few weeks ago that we were closely watching the Florida special election, the 13th congressional district for that open seat after Bill Young died last year. The Democrats put up their 2010 gubernatorial nominee, Alex Sink. She was considered a favorite by many. David Jolly, who was certainly not an unflawed candidate, was able to win that narrowly. Democrats rolled up their sleeves. They were so ready to win this back in November. They kind of kept Democrats out of the field and instead tried to get this former Republican guy named Ed Janney to run as a no-party affiliation, kind of a stealth Democrat in the race. He got in the race. We're now past the filing deadline. And then Ed decided, you know what? I'm just too busy. I can't run. So as Roll Call puts it, apparently Democrats are determined to challenge the old political axiom, you can't beat somebody with nobody. Safe Republican. So, Jim, that saves a lot of money for the NRCC and other conservative organizations to fight the battle elsewhere.
Yeah, although let's point out, the reason they say you can't beat somebody with nobody is because nobody is not usually listed on the ballot. The only thing I'm going to add here is that apparently somebody, that was National Journal or somebody, had said, ah, you know, this is the biggest mistake Democrats have made in any race in 2014. And I suppose that could very well be the case, but you're just kind of young, isn't it?
It certainly
only
is.
May. Don't make bigger mistakes. They'll have bigger regrets, you know. November's a long ways away. So David Jolly, just born under the right sign of some kind. He's just, you know, got some lucky horseshoe in his pocket because he keeps getting one problem for Democrats after another. And you know what? Look, David Jolly, you've been given a good opportunity. Earn the people's respect. Earn the people's trust. And maybe you'll end up being more than a one-term wonder or one-and-a-half-term wonder and become a much better congressman than a lot of people expected going in.
On to the bad martini now, and this comes from Reuters. Russia is to deny the U.S. future use of the International Space Station beyond 2020 and will also bar its rocket engines from launching U.S. military satellites as it hits back at American sanctions imposed over the Ukraine crisis. Russia's Deputy Prime Minister Dmitry Rogozin announced a series of punitive measures on Tuesday against the U.S. in response to sanctions imposed after Russia annexed Crimea. The two countries have long cooperated closely on space exploration despite their clashes in foreign policy. The space station is manned by both American and Russian crew, but the only way to reach it is by using Russia's Soyuz spacecraft. So we're completely dependent on them due to decisions this administration has made about the space program, Jim. I'm not sure you can chalk it up to the blistering ferocity of these sanctions. What it shows is that when you're dependent on others for critical programs like the space program, you put yourself in a bind sometimes.
I understand we live in an era of budget priorities, and we on the right have said, look, the government's got to spend less, it's got to tax less, we've got to reevaluate what the government does. But you know what? Being able to send stuff into space, first, like one of the few government duties that are cool. You know, it doesn't, you know, it's not sending checks. It may not be as much, guarantee as many votes as an entitlement program. But it, you know, besides the, you know, obvious national pride ramifications, they all, you know, you never know when you might need to send something up there. Whether we need to send Bruce Willis up there to stop an asteroid or, you know, do something for our national security, you know, various space command and all that stuff we have with the Air Force. So, as soon as the cutbacks to NASA came through, there was kind of this sense of like, look, you know, like, that's not what most people really roll their eyes about. People say, oh, we can spend the money better here on Earth. Well, look, we got Tang, Velcro, we get all this kind of strange stuff we didn't think we were going to get. Freeze-dried ice cream, you know. NASA comes up with all kinds of fun stuff for what we spend for it. It didn't really seem like a lunatic way to spend money. Here we are, and now all of a sudden we're seeing the consequences of this. And, you know, just why did we ever rely on the Russians? Why, Greg? Why? Did we learn nothing from the hunt for Red October? When these guys require a plan for you know what, the idea of them forever being our ally and forever being pliable to our wishes is not terribly likely. And you know what? You don't want to have to outsource your space program to another country. The United States of America should not be outsourcing its space program.
Clearly the case. And it's not going to take effect till 2020, so who knows if it'll actually happen. But from the fact that the International Space Station is our number one space priority, the fact that we can't even launch our own people and stuff, pretty depressing. And let's hope for a more ambitious agenda if we're able to afford that. All right, on to the crazy martini now. We did a double shot of Obamacare yesterday, and the news is not any better today. This comes to us from St. Louis news station KMOV.
$1 billion government contract involving hundreds of local workers at an Obamacare processing center in Wentzville. But now employees on the inside are stepping forward asking, is this why we're broke? Some of them claim to spend most of their day doing nothing. After providing proof of employment, this Serco employee agreed to speak through the phone with their voice altered. The employee says hundreds of employees spend much of the day staring at computer screens with little or no work to do.
Are there some days where a data entry person may not process one single application?
There are some weeks that the data entry person would not process an application.
If you couldn't understand that, he said, some people go weeks without processing a single data application. So a lot of people just sit around at the most. They click refresh every once in a while. billion-dollar contract, Jim.
My first question upon listening to that audio is, why did the Obamacare Navigator program hire Darth Vader? He just seems like the wrong person to have on the phone answering people's questions about the program. No, the Navigator program people have asked about for a really long time. Jillian Mellicore has done some fantastic research on the kind of people who are getting hired by it, the kind of very iffy at best background checks that were being done. And now the question would be, you know, how much were people going to need this and how much were people going to be spending on this? And was this going to be well-regarded expenditure absolutely necessary? Or was this kind of a make-work program? Or was this kind of a system just for helping out Obama and the usual crew, Acorn under another name, and, you know, throwing around federal dollars to give people work in which they wouldn't be doing a lot of work at all? Well, here we are, and while I don't necessarily know if that's the case in every particular example, certainly in this case it indicates that taxpayers are not getting a lot for their money. That's not to say that it's unbelievably shocking, but it is kind of, you know, kind of shows that this program is living up to the worst fears and frustrations and warnings of folks on the right.
You could have sent something into space for that billion, you know.
There you go, exactly. Could we send the Obamacare Navigators up into space?
Jim, depressing way to end the day, but at least we had two good martinis today, so that was
exactly
a nice
it balances out in the end.
Absolutely. All right, have a great day. We'll talk to you tomorrow.
See you tomorrow, Greg.
Jim Garrity of National Review. I'm Greg Corumbus of Radio America. Join us again on Thursday for the next Three Martini Lunch.